guys of Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Yeah, you know, frustrating. You know, obviously you deal with injuries in football. It's part of the game. But, you know, you never really know what's going to happen. Jacksonville last five games of the season. You know, unfortunately, I felt like I was having one of the best seasons of my career, and I wanted to obviously help my team win games. So just not being there and being on the sideline was obviously disappointing. But we've been rehabbing, been recovering, and feeling good. So looking forward to this upcoming season.
Eric Kendricks talking about how hard football is on your body. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to this season.
Don't gotta tell me.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, Phil Mackey. What's
Phil?
Going on,
Judd?
Let me say this about him, though. So like, when it comes to Kendricks, for everyone who says, you know, Danielle Hunter is just quiet, he's not going to talk, he just doesn't like you guys, or whatever, I recall Eric Kendricks a few years back being a terrible quote, like purposely wouldn't say a word, like didn't understand, like had clearly been told, hey, don't say much, and so he went over the top, and he was never hostile. But he wasn't enjoyable to talk to, okay?
Yeah.
I'm not saying what he just said there is like, oh, my God, it's great. But you know what it is? It's an effort and it's a maturation that I appreciate. So like, for all we rip guys who don't talk or who don't grow up, a guy like Kendricks is a great guy to look at because he didn't exactly cut open a vein there, which is absolutely fine. But you know what he gave you? A response.
I've always found it weird when athletes don't use the media to their advantage. Like, sometimes athletes feel like they're being attacked by questions. It's like, no, you have a platform.
Yep.
You have visibility. You have a name. And regardless of what's being asked of you, you can spin it however you want. And the athletes that sort of figure out how to play that game. Actually, I heard a Michael Strahan interview a week or two ago, and he talked about this very thing, how at the beginning of his career, he was just like, get out of my face, you know, don't talk to me. And then he realized, no, I'm going to control this.
Yes.
I'll talk about football on this day. And then if anyone asks me about football on other days, I'm just going to talk about whatever I want. And maybe I don't feel like talking about football on a Thursday.
Correct.
Right. But I'm going to portray myself to the fans and the public how I want, regardless of what the media wants to ask me.
And how smart is that?
Yeah.
Like, that's the move.
He's definitely found his voice in the last, like, 2 years.
Right.
And he's been a really good quote. A lot better.
And he's done it because outside influences from life, so not
certainly
people, but things that he thought were important, he decided, I'm going to talk about them. So here's the conundrum, especially, it's true of sports, but especially in football. The conundrum is this one. You know as well as I do, Phil, that these guys are brought up by football-y football coaches saying, don't say a word. It's all about the team. Just don't say a word. Don't say a word. And a guy like Kendricks for most of his life was probably like, hell yeah, it's all about the team. And then he starts to like look at the world around him, right? And he has interests and he cares about things. And he's like, wait, I've got this huge platform. And I can either talk about what I believe to be important that's on that platform, or I can talk about, you know, we're just going to go out there and give 110%. And I really appreciate the fact that he sort of at some point in time, because you know what? I'm willing to bet, this might be a harsh thing to say, but I'm willing to bet the Vikings internally, coaching staff-wise, so not the PR, not the business side, but like the football-y football side, I'm willing to bet they don't really enjoy that, right? Like, they would probably like if Kendricks just said, hey, focus on football. Don't care about the world. Focus is on football. But he decided, screw it. My focus is on lots of things. And by the way, I'm really good at football, which helps. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate the fact that this guy was smart enough to basically say, I'm going to start to do it my way, which is essentially what you said, Strahan said. And I'm also not going to be a puppet for like the people who say, just say you're out there trying real hard.
Yeah. First of all, I agree with everything you've said about the evolution of Eric Kendricks. He has just become this wonderful player, leader. I think he has whatever he wants to do when he's done with football, whether it's business or media. I think he'll have a number of different options. I mean, he's certainly active in the community. But think about how big of a waste it would be if in your 20s and early 30s, if you have this great platform and you don't use it to build a connection with fans and to be sort of the vocal leader of a locker room, if you're able to, right? If you're a good enough player to. So it's been it's been really fun to see the way that he has evolved. It's a little apples to oranges because I think Eric Kendricks has a little bit of a brighter personality in terms of just like likability, but EJ Henderson was a little like that too. Like early in EJ's career,
yeah,
he wanted nothing to do with the media. He was super quiet. And then by the last two or three years until the devastating broken leg in like 2009 or whatever year that was, you know, he sort of realized, oh, okay, yeah, I've got a platform. I don't have to be worried about these schmucks, the Judds and the Phils. Like, right. Who cares what they're asking me, right? Like, I can talk about whatever I want to. So it's been fun to see Eric Kendricks grow into that.
Bravo, though,
into
dude.
That role.
Bravo. That's
to
good.
Me for asking great questions to EJ or to Eric?
No,
for...
to Kendricks. I just appreciate guys that get it. And it doesn't mean he's got to be really nice. And it does not mean that he has to talk about what we ask him about. But you know what he does now? He like gets it and responds to questions. And I was just watching poor Neil do his Zoom a couple days ago. And, you know, he so didn't want to be doing it. And that also, to be clear, does not make him a bad guy. But the point is, like, he just has no idea how to swing that towards him. Because it wouldn't have been that hard to subtly say some things where we would have said, oh, okay, cool. As opposed to, you know, the coaches tell me not to talk about injuries. I mean, the coaches have talked about it. Like, you can talk about it, dude.
Yeah. Also, screw the coaches, dude. Like, you can talk about it. It's your body. You can talk about it.
100%. I mean,
easy for me to say screw the coaches. I'm not playing for them.
Yeah, yeah, so, you're not playing for Zim, who might just come in and start screaming at you while you're on the Zoom.
Hey, Mackie.
That is my worst nightmare. Like, I quit football in eighth grade because they made us run too much and they yelled at us. I'm like, I'm playing baseball year-round.
Yeah.
Screw this.
Baseball.
I'm not going to run around the field 9 times with no water break because some fat kid can't beat the time. Not that I was in the best shape, but it was always like, all right, everyone's got to run around 2 fields within whatever the time limit was. And if any one of you doesn't meet the time, you all have to run again.
Why is that?
It was always like 3 fat kids.
Dumbest thing.
Why is that? Like, what? Like, what's the reason why some...
And then you make that kid feel terrible, too. It's like,
well, and that
you
kid...
know, by the way, if he didn't beat it the first time, he's not going to beat it the second time.
And that kid flat out shouldn't be playing sports. Go find your school paper and rip the team.
Exactly.
It's the best idea.
Well, this is your Friday episode of Mackie and Judd. We've got a rom-com rewind on the horizon, but we started doing this last week. We're going to bring you Feedback Friday. Or really, so you guys are bringing it to us. Feedback Friday is all about scanning through the Score North YouTube comment section and people who are tweeting us various things. Could be questions, could be positive or negative feedback. We got a little bit of a mixed bag here this week, boys. So let's dive into it, courtesy of our friends at the 3M Open. So I know there's a big golf tournament happening right now. It's called the U.S. Open, and it's one of the big 4 majors, right? But the 3M Open, in terms of local Minnesota golf fans, that's sort of our, I don't know, I guess pinnacle, if you will. All these top pros come into town July 19th through the 25th at TPC Twin Cities, and tickets are available at 3MOpen.com/tickets. Open to fans. It's going to be a blast. Again, July 19th through the 25th, TPC Twin Cities, 3MOpen.com/tickets. All right, boys. GIMP6019 comments on the Score North YouTube page. Let's face the facts. Rocco has no clue about pitchers and neither does the front office. They all need to be relieved of their duties. Matt H. says, every single team in this town would fire everyone if their season went like this, including the Wolves. Rocco and the front office should be cleaned out after the season, not 100% committed to winning. 0-18 in the playoffs as an organization, enough said. So I guess just like summarizing these two, do you think multiple heads should roll because of this twin season?
Oh, my God. There's a lot to unpack from this, and it's early, so I'm a little bit tired, but I'll attempt.
It's early for you.
Yeah. All right. So, no, I don't think that you should. They made the playoffs twice. And while I've never bought in that when they went to play the Yankees in the playoffs in 2000 and what was that, 19, I never bought that the team could dismiss the previous franchise's playoff losing streak because they're asked about it so much. And I think it starts to weigh on you. But like, do I directly blame these guys for all 18 playoff defeats? No, they made the playoffs twice. I guess in order of who I'm having second thoughts about, okay? Like, who am I, like, I don't know about this guy now. Number one on my list, Rocco. I'm just having second thoughts. I don't know if, I think he's tipped his hand, possibly, boys, on crisis management, which in sports is incredibly important. And in 2019 and 20, 2020 was difficult for everybody, but I don't know that there was an individual crisis for the team itself as far as, like, things falling apart.
Yeah, the common denominator was crisis.
Yeah.
There wasn't anything, like, too aggressive.
Special crisis, right? There wasn't. So what he's done and how he's handled pitching at times, going back to the playoff games as well, he's the top guy that I think begins the – I think he begins 2022, to be fair, if there is a season, on a very warm seat. Like, he's not gone. But I think his seat is going to get warm.
So you don't think they let – you think there's no chance –
no chance he's fired. No chance he's fired yet, unless he decides I'm done, which I don't think he will. As far as the front office goes, Falvey and Levine, I am giving them a reset year. I mean, they came in here and redid things pretty well. Now, that does not mean I'm not concerned about the fact that clearly they have not developed pitching like we expected them to. So are there red flags? Absolutely. But I think if we're talking about one guy having a warmer seat at the beginning of spring training 2022, it's Rocco. I do not think anybody is fired right now or after this debacle of a season.
Yeah, there's the will they be fired, and the answer is no. Across the board, the answer is no. I'll come back to that in a second. Should some be fired? I am really down on Rocco as a manager. And it's hard to know. I think the things that we can see and judge are only like 20 to 30% of being a manager, like pitching moves and bullpen strategy and lineups and all that stuff. Like, we can judge those with our eyes. Really, the main job of a manager is behind the scenes and creating an environment through everything that you do so that players can operate as close to their 100th percentile as possible. And through both of those avenues, I think he's fallen short, especially this year, obviously. I mean, all of the different pitching, and some of this is being driven by the front office, but when you are so afraid to leave pitchers in a third time through the order in certain situations, when you regularly turn to Alex Colome and Matt Shoemaker well after they've proven that they can't handle certain situations, like, it just doesn't make sense. But the guy that I have soured on the most is probably Falvey. He's a smart guy. He's a thoughtful guy. I think he's a good leader in a lot of ways. But he's been here for 5 years now, and they hired him because of his leadership, but also because he was part of the Cleveland Indians pitching factory.
Yeah.
And I know that they would say, listen, COVID derailed some of the development. Maybe Duran and Balazovic would have been up. And that's probably true. Like, a lot of those guys, because they didn't pitch in the minor leagues last year, maybe they had their growth stunted by a full season. But when you look around the rest of Major League Baseball, why is Chicago, why are the White Sox, why is Dylan Cease dominating? Why is Michael Kopech? He's on the DL right now, but Michael Kopech is one of the best relievers in baseball. Like, these young dudes are coming up. Cleveland continues to bring up young arms throughout the last 5 years. There have been exactly zero Falvey and Levine homegrown starting pitchers that have come up through and been productive. Berríos was not drafted by this regime. He was drafted almost 10 years ago now by Terry Ryan and company. And I don't know that he's necessarily, like, Berríos has just been kind of the same number two starter that he's always been for the most part. So I don't know, man. Like, I think I'm frustrated because the Pollad family is like the least curious ownership group in all of baseball. They just, you know, they were going to give Terry Ryan a lifetime pass to be the general manager until he decided not to. It's like, well, that doesn't seem, there should be some level of accountability, right? So if you're looking for an ownership group to just come in and just get rid of everyone in clean house, this is the last ownership group that's going to do that. So I think Judd's on to what they're going to do. They're going to just chalk it up as a reset year. Are you firing everyone, Declan?
I'm not firing anyone yet. I'm very sour on Rocco. I'm not ready to punt on Levine and Falvey. I think they're smart dudes, but they were supposed to bring pitching guys, pitching prospects here, and they haven't been able to do that. They also have still, as much as some of these savvy moves have worked out, Michael Pineda has been a nice signing. They're still really doing the old school Terry Ryan, hey, J.A. Happ, Homer Bailey, these guys that have something that they think they can tweak. Now, they have more information at their disposal for sure. They're not just throwing money at Ricky Nolasco's like Terry Ryan did in 2013 and then extending Phil Hughes for no reason. But there's still, I've yet to see, like, the outside of Josh Donaldson, which was a big signing, and they deserve a lot of credit for making that big signing. They've yet to really make that big impact pitching signing that fans have been wanting for a long time.
They also, one thing now that, because the team is so bad, is coming back to haunt them as well, is they have also, when they're presented with opportunity at the deadline,
yes,
don't make moves to say, we have an opportunity. I mean, the Sam Dyson year was the ultimate hubris of, well, in 2021, you know how good we're going to be? We can't trade these guys now. And I mean, you know, Phil, going back to when we started the show and you used to talk about the Cliff Lee opportunity and the fact that the Twins wouldn't trade at the time, Aaron Hicks, how often does a team hold on to prospects when it's got an opportunity to win and say, yeah, we can't trade that prospect, and that guy turns out to be okay or worse than okay, and you passed up a chance? I mean, that Twins team passed up a chance.
Dude, I was at that Twins-Mariners game, the first game on Monday of that three-game series, and somebody walked by in a Mariners Cliff Lee jersey, and it just brought me back 11 years ago.
Cliff Lee I like Cliff Lee a lot, by the way.
The Twins, in trying to beat the Yankees and get to the World Series,
yep,
drew a line and said, man, we'll trade you almost anyone, but not Aaron Hicks for Cliff Lee. I mean, imagine that 11 years ago. Obviously, you would go back and say, yeah, please take Aaron Hicks, and would you like another Aaron Hicks for Cliff Lee? And because of that, you went into Yankee Stadium with Brian Dunsing going up against, I think it was like, I don't know if it was Andy Pettit or somebody.
Yeah.
But what you just said, 2019, and I was just interacting with, I think it was loyal follower Sam Nord on Twitter yesterday, and he brought it back up. 2019, the Twins had the greatest home run hitting team in Major League history. And at the trade deadline, they made two moves, Sergio Romo and Sam Dyson. It's really inexcusable. And it was a first guess on our part, too. It's like, dude, what are you guys doing? Be more aggressive. Get a starting pitcher in here. Do something beyond, like, a seventh-inning reliever when you have the greatest home run hitting team of all time. So protecting for the future, I get it. You don't want to gut your whole organization. But look how many times the Twins have passed on chances the last 10 or 15 years to add a key piece that might cost you three of your top 10 prospects, you know? And got to swallow hard. But if you want to win a World Series, that's what you have to do.
And on Dyson, you literally got ripped off. Like, you made an inexcusable trade. And I don't know if it was a lack of due diligence on the Twins' part or what, but you got completely done. You got ripped off. And, you know, we can never forget the fact that in 2019, with a team that was damn good, you had to, I don't know why, but you did, had to start Randy Domnick at Yankee Stadium. Think about that for a second.
Yeah.
Like, you're a playoff team.
Yeah.
You've got an offense that is absolutely great, juice ball and all, I don't care. And one of your starters, now, it was self-induced, but you felt the need, because I think Odo started game three at Target Field, to start Randy Domnick. And again, first guess, we all said, this is a disaster.
Yeah, and it was.
And it was.
Yeah.
Depressing.
Tyler, let's see here. Cole Larson says, reasons why I watch Score North on YouTube. One, great sports talk about how Minnesota sports can win a championship before we all die. And two, Phil's transitions to sponsors.
Mm.
Yes.
Nice, man.
Yeah. Very good.
Very good.
Yeah, Cole. Well, you know what, Cole? That's a great assist, because I'd love to tell you, especially if you've got some business owners in your family, about Federated, okay? Because Federated's been around for over 100 years, based in Owatonna, and they are here to give you peace of mind, risk management tools and resources, and you can find out more, including a full list of industries Federated protects, at federatedinsurance.com. Federated, it's our business to protect yours. There you go, Cole. Tyler Kaiser. Tyler Kaiser says, Phil, you are not a crazed Timberwolves maniac. Anthony Edwards is the one I wanted them to draft because his athletic ability is insane. But also, unlike Andrew Wiggins, he has that dog in him. And when he smells blood, he wants to kill the opponent. Ant is legit and will be legit. So you guys looked at me very sideways when I told you. that Ant was a better version of some of these combo guards that we're seeing in the playoffs right now.
No, I felt like you were jinxing
it. Definitely tilted
though.
Your heads.
Yeah, but no, I did because I felt like you were jinxing it. I mean, the Timberwolves history is filled. Yes. It's filled with the cliffs that come out of nowhere and we fall off of them. So it's not that Ant can't be great. I just feel like going down that path now takes us to a place where, oh my God, he just tore something or something. Hey, I got a question off of the playoffs, because we've been drawing a comparison, and I'm wondering if our comparison is slightly off and if there's a better comparison for the Wolves. We talked about this a couple days ago, which in short, to summarize, was why can't the Wolves be the Suns, or could they be the Suns? And obviously the Suns went and got Chris Paul, who's, you know, been fantastic.
Yeah.
Should we be talking more about the Hawks? You know, the Atlanta Hawks
I would say Hawks or Jazz. Yes.
Okay, because the
Hawks or Jazz.
The Hawks were... When they fired their coach and went to Nate McMillan, the Atlanta Hawks, I think, were something like 12 games below 500. They were absolutely terrible. So, like, this was not a team that built up all year, and it's like now they're crescendoing. And I wonder if a team like the Hawks, yes, is the comparison for, and I'll say this very hesitantly, but why not the Wolves? Like, why can't they be like that? Because they certainly are getting the players who could lift you. I mean, Trae Young's a great player, fantastic. But the Wolves, it's not like they don't have good players now.
Yeah, the Wolves don't have... The closest thing to Trae Young that the Wolves have is D'Lo. But they're even there... Like, Trae Young is basically diet Steph Curry. You know, he's like... His ceiling is probably, you know, something less than... I mean, Steph Curry is one of the greatest offensive players of all time. Mm-hmm. But I think in terms of having a young star guard, and the Wolves have two of them in D'Lo, who's only 24, 25, and an Ant, who has the higher ceiling. And then some big men who can be like John Collins, guys that can get out, shoot, rebound. Cat sort of fills that role on a different level. Yeah, there's some pieces. And the Hawks, the Jazz, Donovan Mitchell is a really good player. He's not like a top three player. He's not a Kevin Durant, a LeBron James, a Steph Curry, where he's just, you know, Mount Rushmore of great players this era. Maybe at some point. You have to look at those teams like the Hawks and like the Jazz. How can you put all these pieces together and coach them up the right way, which it feels like Chris Finch is on that path, and get them to at least start taking steps in the postseason? That's what's going to be nice as a Hawks fan, as a Jazz fan. Like, you're watching these teams come together, take some steps, probably going to fall short of winning a championship, but it gives you hope that they're, like, the NBA and the Suns are sort of bucking this trend, but the NBA is such a step-by-step league. You don't just pop up out of nowhere and win a championship. You put in the work, you fail to make the playoffs for a couple years, then you get there, then you get swept, then you go back, maybe get beat again, then you get to the second round. It's like, every step is this methodical, like, learning experience. And the Wolves just have to get in the door. Like, they've got to get to the point where they can start learning. Because it's one thing to finally get to the playoffs for the second time in 17 years or whatever it's going to be. Like, that's been a hard enough rock to push up the hill.
Right.
But the harder rock to push up the hill is, once you get there, becoming a team that can win a championship. Mm-hmm. And at least the Hawks and the Jazz and the Suns have expedited the whole thing because Chris Paul's amazing. At least they're on that. They're in the next level of the video game, so to speak.
Right.
We need the Wolves to get to that level of the video game so they can start taking those playoff lumps. Yeah. I think that's a wrap on Feedback Friday. We went pretty long with that Twins one, and I don't regret it.
Yeah. Oh, we can, anytime, yeah.
Anytime we can cut open a vein on this Twins team, they deserve it in 2021.
Enjoy a weed-free summer at the lake, courtesy of Aquaside. One easy application of Aquaside pellets can eliminate weeds and lake muck.
Yeah.
Aquaside has been trusted by hundreds of thousands of lake homeowners since 1960. Neglecting aquatic weeds can hamper recreational activities like swimming and boating. Lake weeds can also provide breeding habitats for insects. Make your lake shore beautiful this summer with Aquaside. Call 1-800-328-9350 or go to aquaside.com.
Yeah, you can always hit us up. Just leave us. We check the comments on the Score North YouTube page. And we're always on Twitter and Instagram, too. So hit us up. If you have something for Feedback Friday, let us know, and we'll incorporate it into next week's show. But now for the main event, gentlemen. Per Judd's request, we have made the Mackie and Judd movie review pivot back from Action Movie Rewind to Rom-Com Rewind for a late
No regrets.
No regrets.
No regrets.
I had a gut feeling you would be online now.
Hi.
I can give you advice. I'm great at advice.
If only you could help.
Ooh. Is it about love?
Please say no.
No? How cute is that? My business is in trouble.
Huh. Well. I'm a brilliant businessman. It's what I do best. What's your business?
No. No specifics.
If you thought these guys spent every waking hour of their lives doing manly things like watching sports while yelling at their TVs, shaving with straight razors, and revving their V8 truck engines, well, yeah, think again. It's time for Mackie and Judd to turn in their man cards. This is Rom-Com Rewind. Obviously, this is very manly.
I only know him through the, You're not
going to
believe this.
Oh, let me guess. Through the internet?
Yes.
You've got mail.
Yes.
Those are very powerful words.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Hi. Do you remember me from the bookstore?
Of course I remember you, yes. Hi.
Hey, how's your aunt?
She's great. Yeah.
Sweet.
I better go deliver this. I have a very thirsty date. She's part camel.
Joe, right? Joe, isn't it?
And you are Kathleen.
Kathleen.
Oh. It might be my favorite line. I've got a very thirsty date. She's part camel.
That's old school Hanks.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, man. All right. Welcome in to Rom-Com Rewind, everybody, where we do deep dives into three different genres of movies: action movies, sports movies, and rom-coms. And this one is a late 90s classic. It's the third installment of Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan, Joe versus the Volcano, Sleepless in Seattle, and now You've Got Mail from 1998.
Is this the last one?
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Joe vs. Volcano is one of my least... I saw that last year. Not a fan.
Never seen it.
Not a fan. Don't recommend it.
Okay. All right. So we won't include it here in Rom-Com Rewind?
Please don't.
All right. Here's the summary. Struggling boutique bookseller Kathleen Kelly, played by Meg Ryan, hates Joe Fox, played by Tom Hanks, the owner of a corporate Fox Books chain store that just moved in across the street. When they meet online, however, they begin an intense and anonymous internet romance, oblivious of each other's true identity. Eventually, Joe learns that the enchanting woman he's involved with is actually his business rival. He must now struggle to reconcile his real-life dislike for her with the cyber love that he's come to feel. 70% on Rotten Tomatoes. Critics' consensus on Rotten Tomatoes says great chemistry between the leads made this a warm and charming delight. $65 million budget turned into $251 million at the box office. Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan, Dave Chappelle.
Oh, yeah.
And some other actors and actresses that were vaguely familiar. This movie was directed by Nora Ephron, the late Nora Ephron, who also wrote Sleepless in Seattle and When Harry Met Sally. So she is a legendary rom-com director and writer. She directed this movie and also Sleepless, and she wrote When Harry Met Sally. So... All right, we'll start with Judd Zulgad. What was your key takeaway from You've Got Mail?
Okay, I've got two. The first one will be quick. This was clearly the payoff for the fact that Sleepless did not have the main characters together until the very end at the Empire State Building.
Right.
Because, like, there was the chemistry there was sort of like this from, you know, through other people. And so this was clearly that, which was, okay, these two are great together. So let's pay it off, which they did.
And Nora Ephron, actually, she's quoted as saying that she considers this the sequel to Sleepless in Seattle,
yeah, that's
even though
accurate.
It's like not the same.
Right.
It's not the same characters and whatnot, but it's sort of like it picks up and puts them in the same scenes together.
And that gets to my most important takeaway. All right. Tom Hanks. Love him.
Yeah.
Like, people love him. He's Tom Hanks. He proved himself in the 90s, especially, to be one of the great actors. But the character of Joe Fox is one of the worst human beings that we have seen in our... You know what? I'm going to expand this. action movie rewind, rom-com.
Wow, dude.
Joe Fox is a ass. He is a terrible person. And to be fair, the Kathleen Kelly character is an idiot. I mean, an idiot. She's beyond dumb. But Joe Fox, my God. And the you know what? And I say this in all seriousness. The only reason why, like, the chemistry worked and why I think people probably, well, ultimately the financial windfall proves it, loved this film was because Hanks is Hanks. But he was playing scum of the earth. Like, this guy at every turn serves his own agenda. He serves his own agenda. He does everything for himself. He is a rich mogul. You know who's the perfect character in this film as far as because he's a great slime bag? Dabney Coleman, who's Hanks' dad.
Okay.
So Joe Fox's dad.
What's his background?
He just plays a good slime
bag. He's on a yacht.
He was the boss going back to the 80s in 9 to 5. He's just he's good at that. Tom Hanks tries, but he really can't be a slime ball, but the character's a slime ball. That's my takeaway.
So I'm going to elbow in here because I can see Declan disagrees with you, and I just want to double down on what Judd just said before Declan chimes in to disagree now with both of us. I'm going to read you from my notes that I was taking last night, okay? Joe Fox, my main takeaway is Joe Fox is one of the most manipulative and deceiving human beings you will ever come across.
Yes.
So let's just start with the fact that he didn't reveal his true identity the first time he visits Kathleen's bookstore, right? Like, before he even figures out who she is in relation to their online discussions, he's being deceitful from the very first time that they meet, right? He doesn't want to reveal that he's Joe Fox, Fox Books, and he's going to take out her little shop around the corner, okay?
Yes.
But then, so he sits down at her table at the coffee shop when he realizes, oh my God, this is the woman that I have been chatting with online and I've made this connection with. And he proceeds to spend the next half hour of the movie knowing that he knows who she is and she doesn't know who he is, and he manipulates and deceives her and gives her advice on how she should be communicating, as it turns out, with him. He shows up to her house with flowers after he puts her out of business, meets her for brunch and coffee lunch dates to, like I said, discuss everything they've been talking about.
Yes.
And I think, I guess my question off this is, would you guys, if put in that same situation, where, like, would you leverage the power and knowledge that Joe Fox had after he found out Shop Girl was Kathleen Kelly?
1,000%. Yes.
And then keep it up?
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's rich. Do you know how many people are probably after him for a relationship?
By the way, I've done some digging on how rich he may have been, and we'll get to that at some point here, too.
Look, he's definitely a suit, and when she calls him out for being a suit, which is a great, great scene, that's accurate. He's definitely corporate. He's definitely corporate. He's a little manipulative. I get that.
A little
manipulative. I love him. I think he's great. I think he's absolutely great in this film. And I think, like, my main takeaway, number one, is this is an adorable film. Like, that is exactly
what
they
wanted people to think.
It's an adorable film.
Because it's Hanks.
Yes, it's an adorable little cute film. It is a very classic rom-com.
Let's replace Hanks with Michael Douglas, that guy. Because that's the character.
Oh, yeah, he'd be more slimy.
That's the character. You'd hate him.
Yeah, I would hate it. You're right.
Hanks puts a charming spin on a terrible human being. Michael Douglas just comes off as a terrible human being.
Yeah, as a terrible dude.
But I mean, that character was like almost based on characters that Douglas and guys like that had played.
The scene in the grocery store where he convinces the girl, the checkout woman, to use the credit card for her.
Brilliant. I thought that's brilliant.
Dude, if you ever saw that interaction in person, some white guy comes over and he's talking to a person of color in that condescending of a tone, you would have probably been taken aback and said something. But because it's Tom Hanks, it's Joe Fox. Yeah. Like, no, dude. So entitled. All right, Declan, what was your main takeaway?
Yeah, my main takeaway is it's an adorable film. I think it's a great film. This is the first time I've ever seen this movie. I've never seen any clips. I've known of it, but I've never seen it before. I loved the early editions of AIM and AOL Instant Messenger. I grew up with AOL, and I know we'll get to that in a little bit. So seeing that in 1998 is kind of funny. I thought it was really cool how the movie kind of blends perfectly with that weird animation. And I'm sure in 1998, that must have been the bee's knees of, like, graphic animation and to how they like transition it to then the real to like to a real camera and stuff. I thought the opening scene was really, really cool. I enjoyed this movie. I really, really enjoyed this movie. And I don't think Tom Hanks is that bad of a guy.
He's a terrible human being.
I don't think he's that bad of a guy. I would have done the same things.
Tom Hanks seems like a great human being.
Joe Fox. I was at Colvin Wyzetti last night.
He puts her out of business.
I know a D-bag when I see a D-bag. I don't think he's much of a D-bag.
Oh my God, he's a huge.
Feel like your D-bag radar.
I have good D-bag.
Dude, he has no
radar.
Problem with putting her out of business and then still trying to essentially sleep with her the entire film.
Yes.
And by the way, she is a moron again. So
yeah, we'll get to all that. So Joe, what was your favorite part about You've Got Mail?
My favorite part was the part where, and you brought this up, the scene in the coffee shop / restaurant when he knows who she is and she does not know and somehow can't figure out when he drops all the hints of You've Got Mail and she's still like, oh, how'd you know? But that scene itself I thought was great. Meg Ryan in restaurants is fantastic. She was great with Billy Crystal. She's great here. But the angst between the two, the angst between them in that scene shows the chemistry as well. And I did think, to Declan's point, I did think the key to this film, because it really did have shortcomings and I thought it was too long.
Yep.
But the thing about this film that I really liked was the fact that that chemistry was so strong. And that scene itself was, I thought, really good. And because it was good, it was, in a lot of ways, sort of realistic as well, too. So that scene encapsulates, I think, for a large part, what I liked about the film.
So let's just get right into the AIM discussion here, because my favorite part about this movie, and technically it wasn't AOL Instant Messenger. They were just emailing each other, I believe.
No, but there's a little bit of AIM. There's a little bit of AIM.
They break into it. Okay. They cross a line by going to it. I think when she is.
Oh, you're online right now.
And they mentioned that they met in a chat room, and that's how they then started emailing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I would say my favorite part of this movie is just the nostalgia of late 90s, early 2000s internet, messenger. I mean, you think now we take for granted, and who could have foreseen just how many ways we have to communicate with each other now? I mean, you can call someone, you can text someone, but you can also communicate with people on any number of social media platforms. You can send direct messages, public messages, email. I mean, just it's almost overwhelming the number of ways that you can communicate with someone now. And back in the late 90s, we were just getting into people going on the internet. And instead of people using their real names like they do on most of their social accounts and Facebook, they all had screen names. And some of them were not like Shop Girl and whatever Tom Hanks was, New York 152.
Twitter-like sort of, you know? Something.
Yeah. Now. You had your handle.
Yeah.
Yeah. AIM screen names were like your handle, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I know, Declan, you used AOL Instant Messenger
back in the day, right? It was a big move. There was even times where I would leave, when I didn't have a cell phone, I would leave an AIM message. I would leave my AIM as my...
Oh, what, your away message?
Like, no. I would use my AIM username instead of giving out a phone number.
So you meet someone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's absolutely...
Yeah, that was absolutely in play.
So I was born in the mid 80s, and so I was in junior high and then early high school when AIM was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And, most people had dial up internet. So if you were to go online for a period of time and at night, like it was a big deal because you're essentially shutting off phone communication in your house for your parents and stuff. And I was always given permission to go online between like 8 and 10 p.m., try to keep it to an hour somewhere in that window because it's late enough where like no one's going to try and call the house most likely. And we would be wrapping up the day at school, and if you had a crush on somebody or if you your buddies or whatever it was, the question when you were leaving school is always, what time are you going to be online tonight?
Mm-hmm. I believe
always.
I buy that.
You going to be online tonight? What time are you going to be online tonight, right? Dex, you would more often give your AIM screen name to somebody than you would a phone number in the late 90s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Little off-tangent conversation, but the way I fix so – Judd won't know this, so I'll explain it a little more. But so WWE wrestler Eddie Guerrero, he died actually here in Minneapolis, a famous WWE superstar. He had a heart attack, I believe at the Marriott, at a local hotel in Minneapolis the day of a SmackDown taping. And the reason I figured out he died was because I was sleeping in bed sleeping in at like 10, 11 a.m. and I had a computer in my room and my AIM was blowing up and my best friend was trying to wake me up saying, holy crap, dude, I've been trying to call you and you're not answering. And it was my AIM saying Eddie Guerrero is dead.
So wait, were you asleep at this point?
Yeah, I was sleeping. It was the morning of, like, I was sleeping.
Were you on dial up then, or how?
No, this was 2005. So this was okay.
Because you know, I want to get to that.
But we had dial up. I remember that very vividly. And my AIM was Deckman G2. Actually, it's the same handle I have for my normal email now. My dad thought it was good for a second grader to have an email account. So he thought Deckman, which was a normal nickname in my family, and then put G for grade two. So Deckman G2, oh, grade
two. I thought it was
two.
Just Deckman Goff, and nope. Then the two was Deckman, like your baseball number or something.
G as in grade two. That is literally how the origin of my email is still to this day at almost 30 years old. Deckman G2 from grade two.
That's great. So was that your only AIM screen name, or did you have multiple?
That was my only one.
I had a few of them.
Yeah, and they recently destroyed AIM's finally done. Like, I think like only 3 years ago they finally killed it, but I had to bring it back. Yeah. When I worked at the St. Paul Saints, Sean Aronson, that's how we communicated during broadcast when I was back in studio and he was at the ballpark. He was
like G-Chat or literally anything else.
I remember him very vividly saying, hey, do you still have Slack? AIM? And I was like, dude, like, I haven't used AIM in like 6 or 7 years. I'm 19 at this point out of college. He goes, well, like, that is my main preferred communication during broadcast. You have to like text me or send. So Sean used AIM up until it literally goes away.
That's great.
Poor Sean. He must have been so sad like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Just like the way that he's been communicating for 20 years.
Yeah. I think of talking to teenagers as on AIM, and I think of Sean Aronson at the St. Paul Saints, my two most fondest memories of AIM.
So Dawn still has our original AOL email. She still has it. Like, she uses
still,
it.
She still uses it?
She still uses it.
Oh, Rami's had an AOL email address. Still does.
But you should see the looks that you get now.
It's my spam account.
But if you give a person, if they ask for your email account and you give them your AOL email account, the looks that you get are hilarious.
You also, I think, like, some people, like Doogie has a Hotmail email account.
Doogie has Hotmail. Yeah. I can't believe
that's old school.
Yeah.
So my AIM screen names, I had three of them. I think I had a bunch more, but the three that I remember, our fielder, so my number in sports and baseball was 21, and I loved Sammy Sosa wore 21 and Kevin Garnett wore 21, so I love the number 21. So our fielder 21, because I loved Sammy Sosa and he was a right fielder who wore 21, so our fielder 21. And then long ball 21 Mac was another AIM screen name. And I also was, my more anonymous one, if those weren't anonymous enough, was Master of Lingo.
Wow.
Just pop in. Because you could, like, people weren't usually Declan Goff, Judd Zolgad, right? It was, you would get these instant messages, and this was kind of the fun of it when you were in high school and you're just starting to date, and, you know, and you would get these messages from people that had, you know, Sparkle Eyes 45 or something. And you'd have to figure out, okay, is this person who they say they are, or is it, and my friends and I would do this sometimes, or is it like one of your buddies trolling you with what, and they're pretending to be a girl that you have a crush on in school or something. And so there's always the drama of figuring all that out.
Let's get to dial up. Okay. Because this film misrepresents dial up by a lot. It's first of all, it's 98.
Yep.
I don't think there was anything. In fact, you can see the phone cords plugged in.
Yeah.
Now they've got laptops, but they're plugged in. Okay. That's fine. But let's talk about speed, and let's talk about the fact that these people never get knocked offline. Like, inevitably, unless you blocked calls, which you forgot to do at times, if you went dial up, you would get knocked offline.
Are you saying this movie would have been better with like a 5 minute scene of a frustrated Tom Hanks trying to get back online?
The youth of America is not getting the full view of 98 dial up internet. The other thing is you also, do you remember at times how slow it would move? It would bog down big time. And like, I love how like they literally look in these scenes when they're going back and forth, like they're on an Ethernet connection.
Yep.
Like, oh yeah, hey, what's going on? Hey, how are you? You know, I'm just going to go to this website and that website. Anyway, misrepresentation of dial up beyond belief right there.
What were – okay, since we're down this rabbit hole of late 90s internet, what year did you guys get internet? And maybe Declan was too young to remember, but what year did you guys get internet? And then what were some of your early – and I shudder to ask this question to Judd. What were some of your early internet habits or sites or go-to things? Like what
made
you excited to go on the internet?
Oh, yeah. So I remember it started to become a fad or unpopular in like 94, 95-ish or so. And you'd start to see these ESPN ads for their site, which then became, of course, when they tried to get their own brand, the Go Network. So we moved from our apartment in St. Louis Park off of 394 to Eden Prairie in 96. And I want to say we got a computer. I don't think we had a computer before that. We got a computer around 96. Got online internet wise with dial up around 96 or 97. And there used to be a, I'm trying to remember now, there was ESPN, but there was also a general sports site that was really pretty good at the time. Cause like you didn't have all of these offshoots yet.
Was it sports.com?
It was just something like that. It was seriously something like that. But I remember before when we still lived in our place in St. Louis Park, I remember saying to Dawn at the time, can you imagine like being able to go online and get scores and get stories? And she's like, oh, I'm sure that's great. I also, when I worked at the Strib, so keep in mind, for much of my time at the Strib until the mid-90s, we had a really comprehensive computer system, but you weren't like online. It was AP stories were coming into it. And you would get score updates, but you wouldn't get, like, you couldn't follow scores. So in about 95 or so, there was a contraption that was essentially a sports pager. It was the greatest thing, okay?
So like the Twins would score a run and it would just, your pager would go off and it would just show the updated score?
You could get score. So the pager came, I sent away for it, I paid for it, obviously, and you could follow scores. They would update them like a ticker. Inning by inning. And so like I could pull the pager out and see all the scores and it would like have sports news, just briefs, just, you know, small briefs. But the point being is like, it was thrilling to have this. And now you would laugh so hard. It's not even funny.
I remember something similar existed in the early 2000s, like 2000, 2001 was right around the time where I got my first Nokia cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't really have apps, but they had a link. They had a couple different links for like you could, there's primitive versions of websites, but then there was a sports ticker link.
Yep.
And I remember just, you know, Buffalo high school kid. I remember being at winter sporting events like hockey games, watching Buffalo. And then I would have my Nokia phone out because the Wolves would be playing the Kings. And you just, all you would see was Timberwolves 87, yep. Kings 86.
That's yes.
Kings 88, Wolves 87. I'm just sweating this random. I have no idea how they scored or anything like that. So we got internet for the first time that I remember in like 96. I started on Instant Messenger around 97, 98, like in junior high. And the first three or four websites or things that I was just, I couldn't wait to get online. eBay. I collected like wrestling memorabilia, mm-hmm. and things. So eBay was amazing. And I would buy I had an allowance and then eventually in high school, a part-time job. But I would look for like old sports t-shirts and wrestling memorabilia and you could buy autographs and who knows if they were real or not on eBay. And so I was always on eBay just looking at, oh my God, sports cards and stuff.
Yeah.
I also found, and I think it's defunct now, but there was a guy named Sean McAdam who sold old wrestling tapes. Like which is illegal.
Yes.
but the internet wasn't really regulated to that point. So you could, if you wanted like old 80s Smoky Mountain wrestling with whoever, like Ted DiBiase or something.
That's awesome. Yeah.
He would literally sell you like, you know, 3 hours of footage from those old days. That was
fun. Do you remember the price? The approximate price?
I don't. More expensive than like buying a regular VHS. And again, these are things I would ask for like birthday presents, okay. or Christmas, or use my allowance on. And then the other two, so Napster got huge in like 99, 2000, downloading songs illegally. But the number one thing that I love to do early internet days, ESPN.com, starting in like 1998, they were like 15 years ahead of the daily fantasy craze, like what you see on DraftKings and FanDuel. They had virtual general manager, VGM, and you could do it for baseball, hockey, basketball, and it was all play money. But you would essentially compete with all these other people around the country on a nightly basis, and then for the season, putting together lineups that were going to perform the best that night. And you had a salary cap to work within, so you could go get, like I remember in the late 90s or like 2000, you put together a basketball lineup, and Kevin Garnett's playing the Warriors, so you know he's going to go off for 25 and 19 and 5 assists and not miss any shots. So you'd stack with like expensive KG, expensive Chris Webber, and then I need a cheap point guard, so I'm going to go Jamal Tinsley with Indiana because he's going to get 9 assists, you know.
Right.
And so like I played those VGM games all the time for like 3 or 4 years, 1998.
I don't recall those at all.
So much fun.
I don't recall those at all. The only thing I recall is the initial ESPN design was just so awful.
Oh, terrible.
And like the columns would be like really small spaced, and yeah. And it was, so it's challenging to read them. And like, yeah, it's that, like, yeah. It took them forever to get, like, it's like, just put some space between the paragraphs or something. I don't know.
Yep.
All right. Earliest internet memories I remember. I mean, I remember the dial-up tone. I remember all that. We were also one of the first families that upgraded DSL, right? That was like the first upgrade from dial-up, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. I remember getting DSL, and that was a big deal because like we were like one of the first of my friends that like had DSL, so people used to come over. Same with TiVo. We were like, I swear to God, we like in 2003, my dad jumped on the TiVo bandwagon first, and TiVo was a humongous thing. And the bloop, 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 I can still hear the sounds of it. My dad was a humongous eBay dude, like same timeline, 2001, 2002. The one that I remember the most and the one he got super obsessed with was two things, candle making. He loved to make, he bought stuff to make his own candles. And then the other one, and I'm seeing this now make a comeback and seeing it all over the internet, is the ear waxing candle. Like to get earwax out is like you literally lay your head down and you stick this candle, like a humongous candle in your ear. He would buy these things, and we used to have people over all the time, friends and family, and there'd be people, my aunts and cousins and family friends, doing this earwax candle in our house, and all because
that's
of eBay.
Super weird.
Super what? Gross. Super weird. Yeah, it was super messed. And
were
now I'm seeing it come back.
Child?
What's that? No, not yet.
Sounds like you were in a cult as a child.
No.
Oh, no. It's
cult
time.
Of Kirk. Yeah,
it was,
oh,
it's
was
just trying
one.
To get... Earwax out.
I was the first one. But
we're sacrificing Aunt Joan. Don't tell Declan.
Where'd Aunt Joan go?
Oh, her
she
ears
had to go away for a while.
Her ears are all cleaned out though, beautifully.
The websites too. I remember are ESPN.
Hi, Uncle Charlie Manson.
Cartoon Network. CartoonNetwork.com had a lot of like fun interactive games on it and stuff. And I used to go to that all
like,
the time.
Yeah.
Like Dexter's Lab and Ed Nitty were my shows right here.
That stuff all moved with dial-up. You like couldn't do it.
Yeah.
It moved so slow. It'd be like, it was like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah. Love it. I think we're over to Declan. Your favorite part about You've Got Mail.
Yeah. Favorite part, two things. I love the cast. Dave Chappelle is my favorite comedian of all time. And like, celebrity death that will affect me the most will be Dave Chappelle, like 100%. And I have, not to get morbid, but I have a horrible fear he will die young. Like I just have this terrible, terrible, terrible fear. I love me some Dave Chappelle. And also Greg Kinnear. I like Greg Kinnear in this movie, who plays Meg Ryan's boyfriend, husband, and throughout the majority of the film.
We gotta talk about that guy.
Yeah.
And I've got a question about him too. But
and,
yes, that's
and
a
my,
great one.
And my and to segue to it, in the favorite part, I love both of their respective breakups with their first girl, significant others. So Tom Hanks's breakup in the elevator, realizing like he's stuck in this elevator and like this naggy, terrible new, like you think
Parker
Tom
Posey.
Hanks sucks? Yeah. She sucks. She sucks way more than Tom Hanks.
She's
I can't
terrible.
Stand her. She's equally.
They're both evil.
Yeah. She's not manipulative necessarily. Maybe you don't know because you don't see her a whole lot through the film, but she's clearly a terrible person. And that's where he realizes, oh my God, I can't be with this person. He takes his dog and goes on the boat. And then with Meg Ryan, it's a very like amicable breakup. Like they're just realizing like we aren't in love with each other, like we aren't good for each other, but like it's okay and we're good with that. I loved that their respective breakups, each how they happened, I was a big fan of it.
All right. Joe, what was your least favorite part about You've Got Mail?
Actually, Declan just started down the path that I want to get to. Okay, I think if Meg hadn't had the exact same breakup in Sleepless with Bill Pullman atop the restaurant, I might have bought this more.
The exact same breakup.
Yeah. Oh, we're breaking up after being a couple, and you know, we talked about having kids, but now we're breaking up. That's fine. Okay, so that takes me down this path, though.
Okay.
All right. And it's really Kathleen Kelly as a whole, Meg Ryan's character. After she gets stood up at the restaurant slash coffee place, and she does not know that Tom Hanks, who then shows up, who had shown up and she was disgusted to see, was actually her email, you've got mail friend, okay? She acts like being stood up while it hurt her was no big deal and continues to pursue the relationship and email with this guy continually. Yeah. There is no way any self-respecting human being, male or female, would allow that to just go off their back like, no problem, you didn't show up. I'm sorry. I mean, this character is written, Meg Ryan deserves, and she did a great job, but she deserves better. Like, your writing is, well, he stood her up. She doesn't know it was Hanks, Joe Fox. And so we're just going to continue on and go down the path. You know what you would have said? I mean, a young Declan Goff or Phil Mackey back in this day would have been like, oh, okay, if you're going to stand me up, I'm done now. And yeah, Kathleen Kelly's just like, no problem.
I always had the mindset, and I'm very happily married now and have outkicked my coverage. But when I was a single guy, I would, like, there were certain situations where I would tell myself, like, let's say I would reach out or whatever, and then they would either not get back or let's say we were supposed to hang out or something and they had to cancel last, whatever, right? There are certain situations where I would tell myself, I will never reach out to them again until they reach out to me, because the ball is in their court now.
Yeah.
And so I'm with you. In fact, I'm going to transition because Judd and I are just like in sync on this review of You've Got Mail. My least favorite part of this movie sort of stems from the quote from Kathleen Kelly at the very end where Joe Fox and his dog Binkley are walking through the park and he shrugs his shoulders and it's like, yeah, it's been me the whole time, right? And her quote was, and maybe you have the audio of this, Dad.
Don't
her
cry. Quote was, shop girl. Don't cry. And the dreams
that you did. I wanted it to be you. I wanted it to be you so badly.
That right there.
Yes.
I wanted it to be you so bad. Really? You wanted it to be him? You hated him throughout the entire movie. So you hated the Joe Fox.
Let me just say that right now.
You hated the Joe Fox that you knew in person because of all, and she said all these horrible things about him, right? And then, okay, well, what about the Joe Fox that she knew online? He stood you up. There's literally nothing about Joe Fox that isn't terrible in your life, right?
Yes.
Or manipulative. Wouldn't she be mortified in that moment when she, and she's kind of, you can tell her little Meg Ryan facial expressions or kind of trying to crinkle her face, figure out what's happening, right? Wouldn't you be mortified if you came to the realization in that moment, oh my God, this guy has known for weeks.
Yeah. Yes.
That he's been chatting with me online. I didn't know. That's amazingly manipulative. Like, I wouldn't just be falling into his arms and saying, I wanted it to be you the whole time.
Yes.
Unless she's just looking to tap into some of that Joe Fox net worth, but then
we would have gone down this path quicker. Do you know what this is too? So here's the frustrating thing about the relationship. Okay. You know what this was this just occurred to me, but it's true. This was in some ways a remake of When Harry Met Sally. And they didn't get along and they clashed, but they clashed over normal stuff that people clash about, right? Like they had differences of opinions and views. And I think that film is marvelous and Billy Crystal is great. But this was like, let's make Harry a serial killer and see what happens. You know, let's make Harry
him a sociopath.
Yeah, let's make Harry a horrible human. Because, you know, he's the Billy Crystal character is odd and quirky. But ultimately sort of lovable because of that. So they're like, let's make Joe Fox. You're right. You're exactly right. A sociopath, and see where that goes. Yes.
All right, Dex, what was your least favorite part of this movie?
Least favorite part is the scene in the coffee shop and Meg Ryan really not putting the two and two together. And then also when she returns back to the bookstore the next day to explain that she got stood up and then her coworkers make up the conspiracy theory that that guy on the roof, or the what was it? I had it written down. Not the murderer. Was it a murderer?
Yeah.
The rooftop killer. Yeah. Well, I was like, oh, it was probably him. It was probably like, so you weren't able to put together that this guy is, it's probably Tom Hanks. And then your friends are just like, or your coworkers are, it was probably a rooftop killer. And she kind of buys it too. I didn't like that part in the movie at all. Like, because clearly it was pretty bleeping obvious that it's going to be Tom Hanks. It was going to be Tom Hanks. So I had a tough time with that scene.
All right. Least believable, Judd. Least believable the part
end.
In this movie.
Yeah.
The end. There's no way that the end works. I wanted it to be you. You have destroyed this woman's life. And by the way, Joe Fox, congratulations. You won. Like, your store is going to be successful. In fact, my prediction is that store didn't go out of business till 2014. But, you know, if you look at the end of that film, and that's really how you end it with, you know, I wanted it to be you. And that guy has treated her like garbage for the entire film. No self-respecting person would say that. That to me was the least believable.
So I'm gonna go a little bit of a different twist on this. I think the least believable thing was that Joe Fox's life doesn't make sense to me. So I started doing some digging on what. So in the production notes, Fox Books was originally, they wanted it to be a Barnes and Noble, and Barnes and Noble said no. So Fox Books, and everything about Fox Books, it's a 5-level bookstore with a coffee shop, you know, in it, which Barnes & Noble always had Starbucks inside of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Joe Fox and his presumably his father as well, but like their family owns and runs a multi-chain, like multi-location massive book conglomerate, okay? Mm-hmm. And so Barnes & Noble in 1998, if Fox Books is indeed Barnes & Noble, Barnes & Noble in 1998 generated $3 billion in revenue.
Wow.
Leonard Riggio was the longtime chairman of Barnes & Noble from like the early 70s all the way through like the early 2000s. And according to public records, the public records I found only go back to like 2006, so they didn't even really cover the heyday of Barnes & Noble, which was the late 90s, early 2000s. But even then, he was making over $1 million a year in chairman/CEO salary. So Tom Hanks, presumably Joe Fox, is pulling in like in the late 90s. That dude's probably pulling in $1 million a year minimum, and maybe even more than that with business arrangements, right? And yet, okay, he's with this horrible, not even that great looking, like this woman that he's with is just a devil, okay? For one, and two, why is he like resorting to anonymous, weird, like early internet chat rooms to find dates? Right, the whole
he's got some issues.
It's all weird. Like, this dude would be sought after. This dude is loaded. Like, he would have plenty of options in New York City in the late 1990s. So his life doesn't really make sense to me.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I would say I flip-flopped my favorite and least believable. So the least believable part is the thing I went into with the rooftop killer. My least favorite part of this movie was that it was too long, and I wanted more Dave Chappelle. That's just a selfish move on my end. Sure. I love me some Dave Chappelle. I want a little more of him. Because it was kind of a more serious role. Like, he was a little cheeky and funny, but he wasn't normal Dave Chappelle. And I love that. I love when he actually plays not his normal sticky self. So I want a little more Dave Chappelle. But yes, the least believable part with that whole rooftop killer thing doesn't make any sense to me.
We also have the cheesiest part. I think we can all agree it's probably the last scene.
Yeah. So if
anyone has a dissenting opinion.
And if this script had not had Hanks and Chappelle, it could have been a very dark film.
Yeah.
Like, it would not be hard to spin this into a dark film. Because it's Hanks. Because
like
think
the
about
dark
Hanks.
Version of
like, Joe Fox is an awful guy. Like Joe Fox, if you cast somebody else, a different actor as Joe Fox, like that guy could have. I mean, I don't know. He was a sociopath. He could have killed people.
Yeah. All right, I got some production notes for you guys. A lot of interesting stuff off this movie here.
Okay.
So, in order for their roles to feel authentic, both Meg Ryan and Heather Burns, who plays Christina, worked at an actual bookstore for a week prior to filming. You imagine just walking into a bookstore and Meg Ryan
and Christina's her
filming?
Friend in the bookstore, the younger friend?
Yeah, believe so.
Okay.
Yeah. the filmmakers originally wanted to use a real-life Barnes & Noble for Fox & Sons books, but the chain said no. A recently closed Barney's location was used instead. Dave was actually offered the role – Dave Chappelle. Mm-hmm. Dave Chappelle was actually offered the role of Bubba in Forrest Gump, but turned it down in 1994.
Yeah, it's a good role for him to turn down.
Yeah, good job, Dave.
He got another chance to work with Tom Hanks playing his friend Kevin in You've Got Mail. The shop around the corner wasn't actually a bookstore. In real life, it was Maya Schaefer's Cheese and Antique Shop. The filmmakers thought it had the right vibe, so they sent the owner on vacation for a few weeks, transformed the space into a bookstore, and then put everything back where they found it after they were done filming.
I wonder how much they gave the person to go away on vacation. I hope they got paid good.
It's kind of like,
because you're shutting your store down.
When the Ryder Cup was here, all kind like Tiger Woods and all these top, you know, multi-gazillionaire golfers would do that with they'd home, rent a home for an ungodly amount of money on Lake Minnetonka for like a week or two.
Yep.
And then they would, in some cases, have all of the furniture taken out of the house and replaced with new furniture.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they're out, the house looked like no one was ever there. So that's what they did with this antique shop in I think it's the Upper West Side.
It was.
Is where this movie was filmed. So, all right, definitive relationship rankings.
Did you guys see when they're in a Starbucks buying coffees, what in 1998, approximately what the price of a Starbucks?
$2.95.
Yeah. $2.95 for a Starbucks.
Yeah.
What's that now? Six? Eight?
Oh, man.
What's a Starbucks now?
Well, like, honestly, a normal black cup of coffee is $3 at Starbucks.
Right, but they're not getting a normal black cup of coffee. They're talking about they're getting some
specialty drinks.
Yeah, specialty
drinks. Five to six.
Somewhere there.
$2.95, baby. Yeah. Oh, and when Meg Ryan's friend is talking about the fact that before the bookstore actually does close, and it's being threatened, and there's one point where she says, if I don't have this job, I'm going to have to get a part-time job somewhere and move to Brooklyn. Think about that now. Everyone's gone to Brooklyn. Like, Brooklyn's become the place to be. And at that time, it was like, oh, Brooklyn's a cesspool. No one wants to go to Brooklyn. I thought that was great.
Yep. All right. So we have two different rankings here. We've got definitive relationship rankings, and we're looking for a 1 through 10 score. And the criteria is just chemistry between the characters.
Mm-hmm.
So Joe Fox and Kathleen Kelly. So far, we've done 5 rom-com reviews. Hitch and Sarah are leading the pack with an 8.8. Ben Barry and Andy Anderson from How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, 8.3. Ben and Lindsay from Fever Pitch, 6.7. Melanie and Redneck Jake from Sweet Home Alabama, a 6.2. And Sam and Annie from Sleepless in Seattle, a 3.3, because they were really never on screen together.
Correct.
So, all right, Joe Fox and Kathleen Kelly, 1 through 10, how would you rate their chemistry?
So I don't like the characters. Like, I don't like how the characters are written, but the chemistry between the two actors is phenomenal. So I'm going to invoke a split here and say that while I actually don't think the characters are good people because one's stupid and one is terrible, the chemistry between them ends up being fantastic. And I'm going to give them an 8.
Okay.
Like, I thought the chemistry is – I mean, at that time, Hanks and Ryan were fantastic together.
Yep.
I'm going to give them an 8.
Yeah, I also have them as an 8. I think it's pretty strong. There's bickering and there's a little bit of cat and mouse chasing, and you guys have stronger opinions on the manipulation of Fox than I do. I don't think it's that crazy, in my opinion. It's definitely manipulation. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. But I do think it's an 8. It's an 8.
It's a 9 for me. I mean, it's fantastic. It's a 9 for me, all the reasons you guys said, which means it's an 8.3 composite score tied with How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days pairing. And that brings us to the overall entertainment value of this rom-com. To this point, Hitch is our top movie at a 9. How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, 8.8. Sleepless in Seattle, 7.2. Fever Pitch, 6.3. And Sweet Home Alabama, a 6. Judd?
Declan hit on a key point. The film is too long. It just it drags. It starts to drag. It starts to drag.
Yep.
I love the chemistry between the characters, but the actual film itself to me is not as good as Sleepless. And it's nowhere near When Harry Meets Sally, which I know does not involve Tom Hanks. I'm giving it a 6.
Wow.
I'm going to dock it. There's a lot about the film I will dock. And I will make that up by saying the chemistry between the characters was great, but I rewarded that already. So I'm going to dock the film itself and say that the late Miss Efron did not give, with all due apologies to the dead, her best effort here. It's a six.
All right, Declan?
I like this film. It is too long. It's the first time I saw it. I would like to watch it again down the road. It's very cute and adorable. I think it's an 8. I think it's an 8 out of 10. It maybe leans a little bit too good on the movies we like to review. Like it's a pretty good movie, honestly. I think it's a pretty damn good movie. Sleepless is 2 as well, yeah. But for me it's an 8. I think it's an 8 out of 10. I enjoyed myself.
Yeah, I mean I'm higher on this movie than you guys. It's a 9 for me. This is an iconic movie.
I didn't see this movie going this way. Okay.
It's iconic because of Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. It's iconic because of it sort of ushers in the internet age. I guess you could say that The Net with Sandra Bullock a couple years earlier might have ushered in the movie internet age. But, you know, when you think of War Games? Like, there's probably a few. But when you think of, like, iconic internet movies from that era, this is on the Mount Rushmore for sure. So, and it's wildly entertaining. I don't get offended by two-hour movies like Judd does. But our composite score is 7.7, which makes it the third most, I guess, entertaining rom-com we have reviewed so far.
I have a question. What happened to Greg Kinnear? Craig Kilborn, Greg Kinnear. There's people who have disappeared for the most part.
Oh, did we do a Google search?
He was Little Miss Sunshine. He plays the dad in Little Miss Sunshine.
But that's how old now.
That's 15 years.
And on Talk Soup, he was absolutely fantastic, but that's 25 years ago, probably now.
It has been a long time since he's been in.
Little Miss Sunshine was great.
Actually, he's been in a ton of stuff
of late.
He's been in
the TV series The Stand. I don't watch The Stand.
Okay, then I've just missed it.
What that is, but
I mean, he's been in like at least
House of Cards.
He was in 4 movies in 2019. I've never heard of any of them.
Oh, I had no idea.
He was on one of the new Twilight Zone episodes in 2019. He was in an episode of seven episodes of House of Cards in 2018.
Okay, so I've just missed him.
Yep.
That's a me problem.
He's been doing a ton of stuff. All right, for next week, should we keep the rom-com rewind streak going here?
I'm never going to complain about a good rom-com.
All right. So,
actually, I will complain, but that's after the fact.
A few that we have on our list here, the ones that we talked about last week were While You Were Sleeping with Sandra Bullock, which...
Solid.
I think Bill Pullman is also in that movie.
Yep.
The American President. Let's go. Those are two of the ones we had last week. So While You Were Sleeping or The American President.
Which is shorter?
Wow.
American President runtime is 2 hours and 9 minutes.
While You Were Sleeping is an hour and 40.
So we'll while you were sleeping.
Okay. All right, and While You Were Sleeping will be great fodder. Great fodder. Sandra Bullock, Bill Pullman.
I saw it in the theater.
You guys have never seen it? So
no.
Judd has
saw
seen
it in the theater, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, I think Dex is going to have a lot to say about this movie. All right, so While You Were Sleeping
next week
on Ron Conway.
Right,
and that's a wrap on today's episode of Mackie and Judd. Thanks for hanging out with us, and thanks for turning in your man card at the beginning of this episode along with us.